Hi, this is Josh Hankin of Sandbag Fitness Systems. You know, today I'm very excited because we're going to have our first guest of our new teleseminar program, and I'm very excited to announce that we have Dave Schmitz on the phone. And Dave, I met first at the Ryan Lee Conference a few years ago, and Dave just blew just about everyone away. I think Dave was one of the top presenters at the whole conference, and a conference that brought in people like Mike Boyle, Alan Cosgrove, Brian Grasso. So when you have top names like that and you still blow away the room, I think that says a lot. Just to give you a little background on Dave, Dave has lectured nationally in the field of physical therapy, fitness, and performance enhancement, especially as it relates to reactive resistance band training protocols. He's a developer of RBT boot camps and reactive rehabilitation. Dave has consulted with over 35 high schools and colleges on how to implement his band training and multidirectional speed and strength training programs. He is the founder and developer of ResistanceBandTraining.com, which is the only website exclusively devoted to resistance band training, conditioning, and rehabilitation. So, Dave, I want to thank you for taking your time on your busy schedule. I know you are very busy to join us today.
Well, thanks, Josh. I always got time for these things. These are always a blast, and especially on a Friday, it's a great thing to do, and so thanks for asking me.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like I mentioned before, you were dynamite at the conference, and, you know, what I think is really different about what you're doing is it's not something where people can really argue with the results or try to replace what you're doing with the bands with a different implement or tool. And that's really why I wanted you to talk about this because, you know, especially within the last couple of years, I've gotten a lot into band training. I think it's phenomenal. And, you know, I want to know, you know, what got you into starting looking at the versatility of band training for your patients and yourself?
Well, that's exactly how it got started, Josh. As you know, you said I was a physical therapist, and that's basically my trade. And I kept looking at how to create better deceleration control because I knew that 95% of the injuries were being driven by deceleration control. And when you've seen this too, when people come in to see you that are post-surgical, the one thing they struggle with is being able to decelerate their body, being able to go into a good squat, lunge, and what have you. And so then I came across a couple of therapists that really started to teach me more about how the body works and how the body responds. And so it was a pretty clean relationship in that rubber band training, what it did was, when you really look at it, is it accelerates momentum, and it can accelerate gravity, and it also creates ground reaction forces to come up quicker. And so with that, that's exactly what my clients eventually needed. But what I did was, knowing that, I said, you know what would happen if you flip it around? Could you slow the ground reaction forces down? Could you slow gravity down? And could you slow down momentum? Well, interesting enough, bands do that too. It just depends on how you utilize them. And so what was really cool was I started out using bands as an assistive device to help people to learn to walk and decelerate their body again. And then I said, well, why don't we just flip it around and start training athletes and see if they can improve their reactivity and their proprioceptive responses and their muscle responses to a faster stimulus that would make momentum, gravity, and ground reaction happen. And lo and behold, we started doing this with a couple of athletes, and they just started getting really good movement quality, and it was fast. I mean, they were reacting off the ground, and they could feel it internally, which is, you know yourself, when a client feels it, you know you got them sold. You know they're ready to go. And so that was what we saw, and that, you know, that started in 1997. And we just kept building on it from there, and now it's kind of taken on its own life, and it's been a lot of fun, and we continue to evolve it. But that's really where it started. It started because I was looking for a way to get my clients, more so my patients, better, faster.
And I think what you just said are some incredibly innovative concepts and ideas towards movement and conditioning. And what I want to do is sort of backtrack a little bit because I think, you know, it'd be great if we could sort of go a little deeper meaning in some of these, because I think, you know, for the average coach, trainer, even, you know, just fitness enthusiast, these are brand new ideas. We talk a lot about deceleration and so forth, but I don't think we really emphasize it enough or train it very well. So if we could, you know, most people's, you know, I think when they first think about bands and therapy, they're thinking about the classic tubing that you'll do some rotator cuff work with. Can you elaborate maybe upon, you know, exactly the techniques you're you're promoting, and you know what do you really what are you trying to do, and how do you implement you know the deceleration work when you're trying to you know rehab a client with walking and so forth and multidirectional movement?
Sure. Well, let me give you a perfect example. I have a patient come in who's post-surgical. Let's just say they had a right knee medial meniscectomy. And they're still coming in the clinic and they still are using one crutch or they're still demonstrating a limp. Well, a limp is your body's way of saying, I can't handle your body weight loaded down onto the ground, landing on one leg and balancing. And so when you think about that, you say, okay, if I hooked a band around their hips and I had them just step out into the band is going to stretch. Well, what that band stretching is doing is it's really slowing down your momentum. So now as I step out into a band, so again, people have to understand that what I'm doing is the band is attached behind me and I'm facing away from the attachment and I'm just going to do a simple step. I'm just going to step out. What the band does is it slows down my momentum. By slowing down my momentum, I now can control my ground reaction forces and literally it's slowing down gravity's reaction as well. And so that is a way that people now can learn how to walk but not have to handle their entire body weight. What you know and I know, it's simply like lifting a weight. I mean, you don't put 185 pounds on the bar and say lift it when you know you can't do your body weight. You got to do body weight and then you add a little weight and you just keep building it up. It's the same thing with rehab. You know, if you can't lift your own body weight, I got to make it less than that. And so bands, real quick and easily, allow me to do that. I can do the same thing with a shoulder. Let's say I've got a rotator cuff that cannot raise his arm over his head. Well, we can show you very quickly how to use a band to actually help them lift their arm. So now they have to lift their arm. They don't have to fight against gravity. They make it lighter than gravity, so now they can go ahead and learn how to lift their arm. The cool thing about upper extremity training is you do it in standing. And so one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is the hips tell the scapula how to respond and how to react. Well, if you develop a rotator cuff problem, your scapula is going to shut down. Well, what's the quickest way to wake up your scapula? Wake up your hips. Because if I wake your hips up, it's going to feed up neurologically into your scapula. Your scapula is going to wake up, and now all of a sudden movement quality becomes better. All I've got to do is assist the arm so it's not as heavy, and subsequently now people start learning how to lift and reach. As I explain it to patients a lot of times, I tell them, okay, I'm going to have you lift their arm, and they look at me awkwardly and say, I can't lift my arm. Well, I hook them into the band, and I'll say, okay, I'm going to lift your arm, but think of it this way. You've got a 100-pound weight in your hand. How are you going to get it over your head if life depends on it? And immediately, what do, Josh? They go into a little squat, they load their hips, and what do? They blow it up just like you would do a thruster or a shoulder press. And lo and behold, scapula responds, and boom, their arm goes over their head. You start, you know, practicing that a few times, and immediately they can start developing good overhead reaching in multiple planes now, because it's a band, it goes wherever I want it to. So I can go abduction, I can go frontal plane, sagittal plane, rotational plane. And now keep in mind, I still have their legs free, so I can have them do it step and reaches, step and walks, overhead reaches. It's unlimited what you can do when you use the band as an assistive device. Now the cool thing is, all you do is turn them around and say, okay, you can do it now, let's take the band away. They do it actively. Sure enough, because they've learned the motor pattern, now they can do it actively, and then all you got to do is turn the band around, and now it becomes a resistive device, and now they actually start pushing against the band and having to push against the resistance to get stronger, so now they can push the actual weight over their head. And so what I always say is once you've got a person assisted, it's just a matter of keeping the movement going and change the band around, and you're on your way doing resistive training. And so hopefully that gives you an example. But the unweighting concept is what I see a lot of fitness people using the bands for. And I just had a lady, for example, email me her YouTube video, and she was very proud of it because she was doing sandbag lunges, the kind of the one that I sent to you.
Sure.
Now, what she was doing, though, is she was using the band as an assistive device. So as she lunged out, the band slowed her down. So she didn't have to load her hips nearly as much. So the sandbag was a weight, but the band was actually slowing it down and making it easier. And versus if you looked at when I did the sandbag work, I was lunging into the band, so the band was accelerating me into the ground and forward. I had to deal with that, plus I had to deal with the vertical force vectors of the bag and the momentum that come with the bag. So now you get into some really complex training, but the cool thing about it is that's exactly what happens in life. That's exactly how our body functions. It functions off of momentums, gravities, ground reaction forces, and we have to learn how to deal with them, or we, you know, compensate, or worse yet, potentially get injured.
Well, and what sounds really cool from what you're saying is that, you know, you're not so much trying to train the musculature with the bands. You're trying to basically trick the nervous system going, I can do this, and I can re-coordinate these patterns. Is that sort of a good way
that's
of looking
exactly
at how
it.
You're...
That's exactly it. Yep. And I'm helping out the neuromuscular system by saying, hey, I'm going to go down and get the hips to help the shoulder. Or if my hips are shut down, my glutes have shut down because of an ACL or a knee injury, I bet you I can activate the glutes if I get the shoulder going. And absolutely, you can. So I'll trick the hips and I'll trick the shoulder into saying, hey, I'm going to go get your friends to help you, but in the meantime, I'm also going to use the bands to assist you. And again, this is going to be, you know, for people on the call, they're going to say, well, that's real medically, you know, medical stuff. And it is. But you know what? When people look at using the bands, that's another way they can use them. People are doing it all the time. You know, the most popular exercise with bands, far and away, is assisted pull-ups. Am I right? That's exactly
right.
What people are using them for. Well, that's an assistive device, using the band as an assistive device. That's the same as what I'm talking about. You know, the next most popular exercise is an assisted lunge. I see people doing assisted lunges all the time. As soon as I tell them to turn around, they go, oh, wait a minute, this is a whole different story here. And you're exactly right. Now the band becomes a resistive device.
Well, and, you know, when people are saying, you know, you're speaking too medically, it's funny because I get a lot of people, surprisingly enough, that are emailing me asking me, you know, how do I use sandbags as a rehab tool? And I try to convey to them, well, you know, it depends upon the injury, of course, and whether or not it's appropriate. But bands really, I mean, one reason I really like them and we use them a lot in our facility is because they are very applicable because most people, you know, even if you are athletic, have something going on, whether it's a nagging shoulder, a bothering hip, a knee that's kind of a nuisance, and our tendency is to work through them. But you have strategies to actually improve that pretty quickly, right?
Right, exactly. It's really just, you know, and again, it's like any tool. I could come into your gym and you could just load me up with how to use a sandbag for a lot of different things. And so, you know, the same with the band. You know, here's another thought to think about. When you look at a muscle builds tension by lengthening it, okay? And it lengthens it because in order to get a muscle to fire, you always have to lengthen it a little bit before it contracts. Now look at a band. What do you do to get resistance on a band? You lengthen it out. What happens when you take a band and you lengthen it out and let it go? It explodes. It snaps back, right? So you really, and a coach actually taught me this theory, and he's actually right. A band is nothing more than a muscle without a neurological influence. The neurological influence comes from you, okay? And so the body responds to bands because you're basically training a muscle with a muscle. And I think that has, there's a lot of familiarity and a lot of, you know, honesty about that concept. And people have argued with me on that, but it is. It is what it is. And a muscle, but the thing that people don't necessarily always realize is how does a muscle actually contract? What causes a muscle to contract? And it's really not usually conscious effort. You can make a muscle contract consciously, but in the real world, muscles react. Muscles respond to things that cause them to contract. Momentums, gravities, ground reactions, people coming up and knocking you in the back of the shoulder and you immediately contract. Well, what is that? Well, that's just a momentum. That's a reaction, a ground response. So when you think of muscles and how they respond that way, then bands make a whole lot of sense. And that's why sometimes bands get this reputation that they are this TheraBand or this surgical tubing. You only use those in rehab and you only use those in light aerobics classes for senior citizens. And that's so far from the truth. I mean, rubber bands can be so much more of an explosive type tool but it also can be a real good training tool, and it can be a good rehabilitation tool. You just have to understand what you're dealing with and how the body functions.
Now, you know, I think people are going to get all jazzed by the end of this phone call, if they're not already. And, you know, would you say there's actually a wrong way to use a band? Have you found ways that, you know, people may get too overly ambitious and, you know, maybe not use the bands properly? Do you have any recommendations of how you get started?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's always wrong ways to use tools. You know that there's a wrong way to use a sandbag, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure as a person that has developed these sandbags, you have gotten people back that said, Josh, your sandbag doesn't work. It broke in half. It did this. It did that. And then you start to ask them how they're using it, and you find out immediately why it broke. Mistakes with bands, there's a lot of them, but here's the biggest ones. Number one, putting people in a band that they can't handle. And the reason they can't handle it, or how you determine if they can't handle it, is you watch them move, and you can see them trying to guard themselves against the band resistance. They just simply don't want to let their body move freely. And you don't have to be a movement specialist to see this. You can just simply watch them go, and they'll only do partial range of motion movements, or they'll only go ahead and take small steps on lunges. They just simply, their body's just simply scared to move, and they won't move. That's probably the biggest mistake I see, because when I learned the bands, I was taught, put them in the big bands, the bigger the better, keep driving them, and make them just drop. And that is just completely wrong, because the whole concept of exercise, in my book anyway, is to get people moving better. And you can't move better if you're overloaded. And so that's the first mistake. Second mistake probably is they think these bands are invincible and they can stretch them from here to Arizona. And it just doesn't work. The band is going to tear. A band has each band, at least the bands I work with, they've been tested out to stretch 6 times their length. Now, do we recommend that? No, because over time the band's going to tether. Every band can stretch 2 yards. And if you link 2 bands together, now you can go 4 yards. And if you link 3 together, you can go 6 yards. And so the point is that people have to understand it is a band and it potentially can break. But, you know, the bands I've had probably, and this is fairly accurate, probably about 12 bands returned to me in the last 4 or 5 years that were defective, where they literally broke because there was a defect in the band. The rest of the bands that have been returned to me were hooked onto things that tore them. They were extremely stretched too far. And you can tell because when you look at it, it's a jagged edge. The tear is real jagged and real torn up, and you know that that's not how they would be defective. So those are the two mistakes I see first and foremost. After that, I think it's more just learning and what you can do with them. And, you know, a guy like me who goes crazy with them, I just have a lot of ideas with it. But for the most people, they buy them with a single exercise in mind, and that's why they purchase them. And then I think once they get them, they say, you know what, there's a lot more to use these for. And hopefully the website and all of that starts to encourage people to say, hey, you've got this, you know, 41-inch band, has 50 pounds of resistance. Here's what you can do with it. And it's amazing all the things you can do with it. And the cool thing is, as you saw, and the thing that I was excited about is how you combine up tools. You can combine up sandbags with bands, and now you get a lot of different stimulus that's going through the body to help them improve deceleration control and so forth.
That's phenomenal. And I think, you know, you hit on something, because, I mean, the first time I ever heard about, you know, bands for something other than rehab was obviously Louis Simmons. And
right.
You know, I think he started getting some momentum, but obviously they use it for very limited, you know, uses, you know, mostly just accelerate their bench and their squat and so forth. But you use it for a heck of a lot more. Can you sort of speak a little bit about your system and where you see bands fitting into it?
Sure. I think bands fit into teaching people how to move really well. And we've touched on why that is. You know, now, I want to give credit to Louis first and foremost, because it was him that made me start thinking about this reactive training theory and a reactive training approach that he was using with his power lifters. And the thing that I took from it was I said, well, do you have to be a power lifter to develop reactive strength? And then I took it the next step and said, well, I don't want reactive strength with a bench press. I want reactive strength with jumping. I want reactive strength with being able to punch, being able to reach, being able to, you know, lift a box off the floor. And I want to be able to get reactively so I can change directions quickly when I'm playing a game of soccer or football. So that's all I did, is I took his theory and applied it to functional movement patterns. Now, what we do in our classes is that exactly that. And you start it out just like you do with any other training tool. You go ahead and you break it into progressions and with an ultimate movement in mind. Let's take shuffling, for instance. Okay, shuffling is a frontal plane movement that you have to be able to get your feet moving and keep them nice and wide. Well, how do you start teaching people how to shuffle well in dance? Well, first of all, you teach them how to stop. So we do lateral lunges. Teach them how to do a lateral lunge. Once they can do a lateral lunge, can they do a lateral lunge and release their trail leg? So, again, I'm moving towards the band attachment here. So I'm going to take a lateral lunge, but as I lunge towards that band attachment, I'm going to release my trail leg. Well, what does that do? Puts all the load on my lead leg, which is exactly what I need in order to stop safely. Now let's do it for two steps. Now let's do, instead of a lateral lunge release, let's do a two-step shuffle towards the band attachment and then get back where we started. Once they can accomplish that, then we go, okay, let's eliminate stopping and let's just have you accelerate out using a shuffle away from the band attachment. So you're just going to shuffle out as fast as you can, 3 to 4 yards. Stop and come back slowly. And we work on acceleration with a slow decel. And then once what you'll see is immediately people say, hey, I'm starting to figure this out. I'm starting to get this. And pretty soon the slow decel gets up to 50%, 75%, and all of a sudden they're going back and forth doing this shuffle drill, I mean, like nobody's business. And the reason being is they taught themselves how to stop first. Teach people how to stop first, and they'll be very excited about using bands. Again, one of the mistakes is I see too many people not teach people how to stop, so they get in these bands, they start doing these very complex movements like shuffling, and people don't know how to stop, and they get in trouble. They get their feet tangled up underneath them, or they stumble, and then all it takes, as you know too, all it takes is one mistake with a tool, I don't like that tool anymore, get it out of here. And so then they dispose of it, and they never use it again, and that's unfortunate, because it's just simply a training error. So that's an example of how I would teach somebody. Start them, teach them how to stop. You could use the same thing for overhead shoulder press, you know, the same thing for horizontal chest press, the same thing for a squat. You know, you just the more glamorous, the more sexier the movement, the more complex, the faster, the more explosive, the more you got to make sure you break it down into parts and teach the deceleration components first.
I think that's really important, because I've actually had colleagues that have used the band with their clients, and they made the common faux pas that you just mentioned. They threw clients into bands that they didn't go over the progressions, and the client actually ended up getting hurt because of this things you've already just talked about. They got in the startle reflex kicking in, so they're not taking the right movements, and then they get apprehensive of the movements, and they're in too big of a band, and, you know, bad things happen from there. So just as someone, like you mentioned, went, go ahead and start squatting with 300 pounds, you're not going to start with the hardest band, you're not going to start even necessarily with a band. And I think that's really important to emphasize, and you had a great point of that in one of your emails or your newsletters that I saw, where you're talking about, you know, don't start running with bands until you can run right. Is that right?
Exactly. And that's the same thing. I'm starting a middle school camp next week. It's 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, all boys. And what we're going to do the first week, none of the boys are going to even see a band, not going to put them on the field. What we're going to do is work on developing the movement skills that they're going to have to be able to do before we put them in the band. And then when we do put them in a band, I'm going to put them in the smallest band I possibly have, and I'm going to have them I'm going to have distances marked out of 3 or 4 yards maximum. So all they have to do is worry about covering 3 to 4 yards, which is about 3 to 5 steps, and not worry about going way out or getting real aggressive. I'm going to keep them in a small amplitude movement and just in a small band. I don't have to worry about the band breaking because it can easily stretch that distance. And I'm just going to practice that, and that'll be week 2. Assuming they do well in week 1 with the body weight movements. And then week 3, we'll do the same. Week 4, we'll start throwing in little games. We'll do react and recovery. We'll do partner drills, which are just, I mean, we could talk for days on partner drills, but when you start putting two people into a band, into the same band, and let them start doing reactive partner drills or drills where one goes and then the other goes, you just create just a loads of fun. I mean, it's just a training fun. I mean, I have a hard time keeping my adult fitness people from laughing and having a good time, you know, except when they're really working hard, because they can be kind of talking a little bit, and interesting enough, you can watch your partner and learn from them. So I always say, you know, there's three ways to learn. You can watch, you can listen, and you can do. Well, as partner training, and I'm kind of getting off the subject here, but with partner training, one partner gets to watch and listen while the other one's doing, and then you reverse roles. And so you really can teach band training really fast and effective by doing partner training. And you know what? Nobody's ever bored, because you're either holding or you're training, one of the two. And so you can't fall asleep and not do anything, because if you do, you're going to get tugged along by your partner. And so that's always a good time. And people, you know, that in itself is just another total area of band training that hasn't even been tapped into yet.
And for those of you that are listening right now, and Dave has some great examples of what he's speaking about on his website, resistancebandtraining.com. I've seen those videos, and they're great. They're very helpful to get, you know, a visual concept of what Dave's talking about. You see those short drills done with some of your athletes. I think it's on a indoor soccer field. And, you know, it's incredible, all the versatility that you have available to yourself. So what I want to do, David, right now is start going over some of the questions that we've gotten from people and sort of get your opinion on them and some insights. The first one, I think this is probably the most common question you can get from a fitness enthusiast is, you know, how do you apply bands to a weight loss or fat loss training program?
Well, it's pretty easy. I mean, you know, I've gotten to know Alan Cosgrove as you do, Josh, and I've also worked a little bit with Mike Russell, and these guys are guys that understand fat loss to its infinite point. I mean, they really have researched it. And the things that I've picked out from them is that the hierarchy of fat loss is, number one, obviously you got to get your nutrition on board and get that correct. But after that, it's really a high-intensity interval strength training. Well, I'll challenge anybody to come up to me and say, does your muscle know the difference between a 50-pound rubber band and a 50-pound dumbbell while we're doing, you know, whatever exercise it is that the two can complement each other? And the answer is no. Your muscles are dumb. Your muscles only know that they're working. And so if I can do a high-intensity interval workout with bands, I can burn calories. Now, the cool thing, I think, with fat loss is this. What about taking your clients out onto a park, onto driveways, onto any place you want to train, and now you can go ahead and incorporate environment, you can incorporate other things that make training fun, so these people want to train more. The other thing is, a lot of people travel, business people. Hey, how am I going to get my workouts in? Bands, you can literally train in hotel rooms, anywhere. All you need is a band and a band utility strap, and you are good to go. You can train anywhere. And so when it comes to fat loss, to me, it's all about high-intensity strength training and being able to consistently do it on a regular basis. You know, and I'm not opposed. If you got weights, hey, go for it, because that's just another way to get your body to adapt. But I think bands are perfect for fat loss because all we do is train high intensity. We don't train long duration, slow type movements. Nothing's done like that. So I think they're perfect for fat loss.
And Dave, maybe you could address something interesting, you know, something I've heard, and maybe as a maybe not so correct criticism of band, is there's not that eccentric component that you have with typical strength training. Can you address that a little bit, and you know, why that's a fallacy or how that applies to training?
Well, now you're referring to, like, ask me that again, Josh, so I pick up on that. I'm
so
sorry.
A lot of times, you know, for example, if a coach is dealing with a, an overhead press with a band, that
right.
Some have said that, you know, the eccentric muscle action isn't nearly as great as with like a standard dumbbell or a kettlebell or any of those objects.
Yeah.
Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, and I would agree with it. You know, obviously, if you're going in a vertical plane or a vertical force vector and you're lifting a dumbbell overhead versus using a band to do an overhead press, no question the dumbbell is going to give you resistance throughout the entire movement. Now, with a band, the resistance is going to increase as you go into the movement. So at the top of the movement of that press, the resistance is greater than at the bottom of the movement with a band. No question about that. But now, what's going to happen is the kinetic energy from the band is going to cause an eccentric acceleration of the deceleration component or the eccentric component of that movement. A dumbbell is going to stay the same throughout that entire movement, thanks to Newton's law. It's just going to stay the same. So that's one difference. Now, the second difference is people will say, well, bands don't follow the normal strength curve. You're absolutely right. They don't. Think about what function does. When do we need to be the most explosive? Do we need to be the most explosive at the end of the range, or in the middle, or at the beginning? Well, some people would argue that, let's take an offensive lineman as an example, and he's going to go ahead and he's going to explode off his position, and he's going to do a two-hand shiver into his defensive player. Well, I want him to explode at the end of his arm extension, and I want him to explode through that guy. I don't want him to explode to him. I want to explode through that guy. So what resistance bands, I think, do is they follow the functional strength curve, which is we want to explode through movements, not just to the end of the movement. And I think once you start training in bands, and this is what Louis determined with his training, was he got people to start exploding through their bench press, exploding through their squat, and there was no sticking point anymore. You had to come all the way through it. So he was able to get powerlifters, understanding, he was able to get powerlifters to eliminate that sticking point. And lo and behold, they were throwing up incredibly bigger weight because they had neurologically taught themselves how to explode through this sticking point because they knew bands made them do that. So no question, it's a different type of resistance force, but I think it fits more of a functional strength curve versus the normal traditional strength curve that we're used to. And therefore, I think it fits exactly what we want people to start learning how to do. Not that it's the end-all, the be-all. Don't get me wrong, Josh. I mean, I believe in other strength tools. I believe in weights and sandbags. But what I like is tools that allow me to move in as many directions as I can, as free as I can, just like I do on the field or in life or whatever I'm doing.
Well, and I think that's important because, you know, again, going back to what I said at the start of the call is, bands are very unique. You know, people often get in debates about whether or not to use kettlebells or dumbbells. And to be, you know, perfectly honest, you can get a very similar result using either one, right? There are some finer points, but they're very similar. There's nothing else that replicates the movement qualities that a band produces. You can't replicate that with any other training tool. Which brings me, you know, while we're talking about sporting performance, you know, to the point where I think where you're talking about, you know, maybe collaborate on the reactive part is, you know, most people don't understand that injuries or great performance is dictated upon how your body puts on the brakes. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
So, I mean,
no question. Absolutely no question. All you have to do is just follow me one day through the physical therapy clinic, and we'll ask every single patient how they got hurt. And some of them will say, well, I don't remember. Then you ask them what hurts the most to do. And I guarantee you it will be a deceleration-type movement, bending over to get something, lowering down into a squat, trying to lower their arm from an elevated position. All of those things are deceleration movements.
And, you know, and from a performance standpoint, you're talking about the offensive lineman, but even in speed development, you know, the fastest guy is a guy that, you know, in the timing of the stride, you know, puts the brakes on the lat, you know, the least, right? I mean,
absolutely.
You know, the whole hamstring and quad, you know, points. So really, you know, whether you're, you know, trying to prevent injury or trying to improve performance, you really should try to integrate the bands. And that leads me to my next question is, how do you, you know, we have someone who is a high school football player, how could they integrate bands with a traditional strength training workout, something like a bigger, faster, stronger routine?
Sure. Well, I think the thing that, again, when you look at taking bigger, faster, stronger, I think their whole focus is on trying to get kids to push a lot of force. And it makes a lot of sense, and they've had great success with it. What I look at is I want athletes to go ahead and create power, but I want to look at the time variable. I'm not going to look at the force variable. You know, again, you define power as force divided by distance, or work divided by time. I'm going to look at trying to enhance the time variable. Now, what can an athlete do in the weight room? Hey, all he has to do is work on simple things like lunges. You know, put the band around your hips and start doing lateral lunges, forward lunges. Go ahead and start doing reciprocal pull pushes, which simulates the arm action with running. Go ahead and do fast overhead presses or horizontal chest presses, which simulate a lot of the pushing movements we do in sports. You could go ahead and do a lot of squat pulls, because squat pulls are going to be kind of a modified version of a vertical pull like a clean or a snatch, but you're getting more of a horizontal component to it. Again, when you look at running, how much of running is a horizontal vector component? Some people would argue there's a lot more there than we think. You know, it's not just a vertical vector component. And so how are we training that in the weight room? Well, I just see a lot of vertical vector stuff. You know, if you're dealing with a dumbbell or a weight, bottom line is, I don't care where you put that weight, when you let it go, it's going straight down because gravity is going to pull it. But with a band, you're talking a tool that really is essentially free of gravity. Gravity doesn't influence it. It doesn't influence it. I can do horizontal pushes and create a perfect horizontal vector. I can do diagonal pushes and actually create the diagonal vector that would happen. Now, in life, a lot of times we're throwing things around, we're picking people up or doing whatever. So weights make a lot of sense, but I think in a weight room setting, the way you can incorporate bands is you can start looking at creating horizontal vectors and more diagonal type vectors, and then you also can create the reactivity, training speed, training explosiveness. How quick can you push out with one hand? How quick can you pull and recover? How quick can you hit a lunge and recover back off of it? So you can work a lot of simple one step or one movement patterns where you're working speed and explosiveness. And you know, as soon as you increase the speed, Josh, what does your trunk do? Your trunk goes bananas. Your trunk gets kicked in. It recruits. It gets so tighter and stabilizes so much quicker because speed makes your trunk react. And so if you're looking to develop trunk stability and you're looking at developing core stability, what better way to do it than to start standing and doing some a little bit faster type movements with bands? Again, don't get me wrong. The movement's got to be good quality. I'm not saying just throw your body around and get injured. They got to be good quality, but that comes with practice and time.
Well, you know what's so funny about that last point? You know, it made me instantly flash to Mel Siff, obviously before he passed, was I want to say it was an NSCA conference, it may have been Swiss, where he was talking about, you know, functional core training has to do with dealing with unpredictable environments, you know,
exactly.
And dealing with reactive forces. And, you know, when we do our band training, you know, especially some great tips I got from, you know, watching you do your lectures is, you know, putting people in situations, the bands cause a non-predictable movement, and they have to react to it instead of just, you know, doing that standard crunch or, you know, all those different movements that we're all used to in standardized weight room training. So I think that's a great point. And especially for, you know, MMA is getting big and a lot of those combative sports, that's critical, don't you believe?
Oh, yeah, yeah. See, because when you, you know what I know, if you want to create a response on the body, what's one of the quick ways you can do it? Well, PNF specialists and manual therapists and, you know, these other therapists and other fitness professionals out there are doing manual resistance. Well, manual resistance is nothing more than putting your hands on somebody and creating a tactile sensitivity or tactile stimulus, and the person immediately knows how to contract or what to do against that stimulus. Well, put a band on your hips, and you tell me where you're going to contract from, and I guarantee you if you're going forward and you got a band on your hips, your glutes are going to get active. They just have to. They can't, because the stimulus at the hips immediately makes you go into hip extension. Your glutes activate. It's the same thing I teach people in the clinic when I'm trying to teach them to walk. I'll take a band and put it around their hips just to get them to activate their hip extensors. And you'll be amazed at how quick that brings things on. So proprioceptively, you know, as the person you respond to, he recognized that the core reacts to stimuluses of pressure, and all you got to do is make sure you apply the band at the right position.
And, you know, it's, you know, going back to also what you said, you know, you're not a man of one tool fixes all. And your ebooks, which are just phenomenal, you know, take in some really unique ways of incorporating bands with weights. And, you know, I think that's some very cool ways, because most of us are exposed to only what Louis promoted, which is just loop them around the ends and you do some squats or a bench. And you actually like to loop them on yourself. You know, I've seen you do band squats with a barbell and bands on you. Can you explain why you would do that versus looping around the bar?
A couple of reasons. Number one, it's you have to be a very strong and mature squatter to be able to put resistance, the bands hooked onto the end of a bar, and then you're grabbing on the middle of the bar. The lever arm on that is incredibly long. And if you're not strong enough and not stable enough on your bench press and your squat, and you tip a little bit, you immediately create some forces that I just don't think for you know, less advanced squatters and people that are benching, I just don't think they're strong enough to do that. And plus, I've seen people they just can't handle that. So what I do is I attach the band onto my body. And the reason I do that is because, number one, I think it's safer. But number two, and more importantly, it goes back to what we just said, Josh. If I put pressure on the top of your shoulders and push down a little bit, what are you going to do? You're going to press up, aren't you? You're going to straighten up. You're going to increase your postural stability, and you're going to immediately get taller and kick in all those postural stabilizers, like those mid-back, mid-scapular muscles, those lower abdominal muscles, those glutes, all the muscles that are postural stabilizers, simply because that band was pressing down on your shoulders. So I went to squatting with it crisscrossed across my body because that creates proprioceptively what I want my body to do. It also, you'll notice I crisscrossed it. Our body works in X patterns. We're all familiar with that. So my left hip and my right shoulder work together. So as my left hip explodes, okay, the band is attached from my hip to my opposite shoulder. Guess what happens? The X pattern becomes very proprioceptively activated, and you become much stronger through your core. So literally, I think by crossing over, it creates a huge core activation, as long as the bands are not too strong and overloading. You know, I don't put big ones on that people can't handle. But as long as the band is at the right strength level, I think it creates the exact neuromuscular responses and reflexes we have built into our body. And that X pattern is just simply one of them that happens. We talked earlier about the hip and scapular reaction. I think the same thing happens there. You can get that reaction to happen by maybe just putting one band across, you know, doing what I call a single crossover, and I'll do that very often to create a little bit more activation on a person that, say, is coming off a rotator cuff but needs to get a little bit more scapular and hip activation. So I'll crisscross it. Let's say he's a right shoulder rotator cuff injury. I'll crisscross it and put it over his left foot and his right shoulder. Now when he goes to explode up, he's got to come just a little bit sooner with that involved side, so he activates it quicker. Well, that's good, because what was happening prior to that is it was activating slower, and subsequently it wasn't pushing through as quick. And so it can become a great corrective exercise tool just to neurologically train. So that's long-winded story, but that's why I attach bands to my body, because I think, number one, it's safer, and number two, it creates the proprioceptive and neuromuscular responses that your body has built in. They just need to be activated with a little tactile sensation from the band.
Well, and to follow up on that, you know, the reason I asked you is because I sort of stumbled on that by accident, fooling around with that with myself and then with clients, is that, you know, I think as coaches, we find a big problem is, you know, people can't figure out how to use their glutes and hamstrings, right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the bands, like you mentioned, forced people to do that. And what I found was especially interesting was when people actually started pressing up and feeling their glute and hamstring, is that the common hip flexor issue would let up because their hip flexors were now not being overly active because the glutes and the hamstrings finally fired. Did you find that to be true as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you saw my modified swing exercise, where we go ahead and do swings, well, with the sandbags or with kettlebells. Well, by putting that band at my hip, it immediately causes my hip and all the posterior muscles to activate quicker. So now it's not just the swing motion that's creating my hip to activate. the band is also proprioceptively causing my hip to go into extension. And so if you want to get a really great swing workout, put a band on your hips and then start doing the movement like you normally would. And it's incredible, the activation. I mean, people had a hard time. I wasn't a good instructor of the swing for a long time. And so I started putting the band on them, and immediately my instruction wasn't as important anymore because they learned immediately what they had to do to get their hips activated to do the swing motion. They knew where to bend and hinge, and so that worked out really well. Again, here's another example real quick of attaching the bands. A lot of people want to run with bands as a harness around their shoulders. And I stay away from that for a long time because as soon as you attach the band up into the shoulder girdle, now what has to stabilize more? Your trunk. Your abdominals have to activate better. So a lot of people that use harnesses start to develop low back tightness and pain because their trunk can't activate fast enough. Their hips are really kicking in fast, and they just simply start to extend too hard through the lumbar spine, and they start getting a lot of low back symptoms. So again, there's an example of, I see a lot of coaches want to put kids in the harness, get them going. Well, you know what? Most high school kids can't handle the harness because their lower abdominals just simply aren't strong enough, and it just doesn't work yet. And so, again, where you attach the band, you still better see really good quality movement. Otherwise, go to a different position because you're just going to create compensatory responses.
That's really interesting because I think I initially did that myself and found it to be, you know, true, along with the fact that people just didn't like it as much. We ended up going with around the waist anyway. But that's an interesting perspective on that. And going back to your swing example, too, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, they're trying to be creative. They're trying to figure out ways to optimize bands because I think a lot of people see the benefit of them, but a lot of people are trying to attach them to the actual implements. Now, I've tried some things attached to my sandbags to bands. I know people have done kettlebells to bands, but what I'm finding out is maybe something I don't know if you've worked with is, you know, it actually works better attaching it to yourself. For example, you know, people wanted to figure out how to press a sandbag or a kettlebell with bands. And what I found is actually, you know, you and I know if you press, you're using the lower body and the midsection. If you use that crisscross pattern you're talking about, it's actually probably more beneficial to put the bands around yourself than it is the implement you're lifting. Do you agree, disagree?
Yep. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think if you're really strong, you can, you know, sometimes what I'll do is with the sandbag, what I'll do is take a mini band, and I'll just take a simple mini band like I was going to do a front squat with the mini band, just one, and I will put that in front, and then I'll grab the sandbag. So I have the mini band and the sandbag in my hands, and I'll just do an overhead press that way while I'm standing on the mini band. I'll do it sometimes that way, but again, I'm only using a mini band. I mean, I see people trying to load up with these big bands, and it's pretty tough to do that. So you can go ahead, I think, and attach bands into other devices. But immediately, Josh, what happens then is you have increased the lever arm significantly because those devices you're lifting with your hands, okay? And so the lever arm is your arm. Now the band is already put out onto your hand. That's a much longer lever arm, and a lot of people, they just can't handle that additional lever arm. Not to mention the eccentric speed that's coming back off of that movement when they have to lower the weight and bring it back down. I think it just puts too much force at the primary joints, and you have to be real careful with that. I think that can be pretty dangerous. And again, it's one of those mistakes that people, well, let's load our clients up, you know, and it's just not the way to do it, you know. I'll agree. Some people just don't tolerate the crisscross setup. I understand. That's perfectly fine. You know, some people don't like a bar on their back, right? Some people don't like to hold a sandbag on their shoulder for shouldering. You know, I'm sorry. You can only do so many things with certain things. But I think once you get used to the band crisscross setup, I think it becomes very comfortable. And I think once you, more importantly, learn how to get into it and out of it. You know, you may say, Josh, well, you just hook it on. There's a very, very specific way you want to get in and out of it because when you're gassed and you can't do anymore, you want to get out of that thing. The worst thing is to have to reach down, bend over, and unhook it on your feet. That's just tough. You want to learn, and in the Unleashed DVD, I take about 2 minutes and just take you through how to get in and out of the crisscross setup so that you really learn how to get in and out of it because it makes a huge difference in regards to rotating clients and just when you're gassed, getting out of that thing, because otherwise it's hard.
And that's important because, I mean, getting out of those situations is as important as getting into them. So what I want to do is, you know, we have a few minutes left with Dave. Dave's been phenomenal. I want to have people know that you can type in your questions if you have any more because we're getting limited on time. So if you want to ask Dave any questions, type them in. That way I can read them off to Dave because I don't want people talking over each other so that we can all, you know, get some same great information. So make sure to do that. You know, and something I want to bring up to Dave is, you know, a few years ago I got to hear Dave Tate speak, and Dave can be very open about his feelings about things. And one thing that was interesting is, I think that this is bands were getting popular within the West Side Protocol. They were having a lot of injuries, he was saying, from using the bands too often. Do you think that's more of a factor of being too aggressive with the loading or the bands themselves? Do you have a rule with how often you use bands?
You know, I personally will incorporate bands into my workout somehow every day, just simply because I want to train reactivity. Now, it might be more of an upper torso reactiveness, maybe a lower torso, maybe some running. So I think if you're asking me how often you can use bands, you can use them every day. Now, if you're simply trying to improve on your explosiveness with certain movement patterns, I suggest probably once a week incorporating more of a reactive band training approach and then going back to your traditional lifting that you've been using or training approach you've been using. I think that's plenty. You know, we haven't even touched on the flexibility component of it, and that's another entity on its own. But I think the flexibility training, there again, I was instructed every day do it hard. That's wrong. Tendons and muscle structures are going to break down if you go hard with the flexibility every day. My suggestion there is you go every other day with the flexibility, and you do dynamic type warm-ups that are well-known out there. There's many of them and many different ways to do it on the off days. And I think that's a much more effective way to do it. So you have to read your body, but I think you can literally bring bands into your training every day in different ways. And I, you know, that's what I recommend when I'm training with bands.
Well, and you know, we do have just a couple minutes left, and I did want to touch on the flexibility component because we use it a lot for that purpose. However, you know, I think, you know, what I want you to elaborate on is people think, well, bands are just a convenient way to replace towels or, you know, other implements for just, you know, pulling on yourself. Can you describe briefly how you're using bands and why they're different than, you know, that type of mentality?
Yeah, well, when you look at flexibility, the worst, you know, and again, I'm going to maybe make some people upset here, but the worst stretch you can put on a muscle prior to exercise is a long duration stretch. And here's why. Just simply because what it does is, if you have neurotension signs or neurotension dysfunction, you're going to really aggravate that nerve tissue. And I would guess that at least 50% of the population over the age of 30 has neurotension problems, where the nerve has gotten adhered down and tightened down. And when you stretch, that is actually what you're stretching. You're not stretching the muscle tissue. Nerve tissue is much tougher than muscle tissue as its structure. So I hesitate to have people do static stretching. The second reason with flexibility is you want it to be dynamic. You want to be contracting a muscle and relaxing. PNF, contract, relax, stretching has been around for years. Band stretching is nothing different than contract, relax, stretching. But the difference is if you take a rigid strap, there's no accommodating. The rigid strap will not stretch, will not bend. If you take a band and you start doing your dynamic stretching program like we show in the DVDs, how to go ahead and go through it, what you're going to get is you're going to get muscle accommodation. And the best way to lengthen a muscle is to lengthen it in an accommodating fashion. Let it get used to lengthening. Don't just abruptly take it into an aggressive stretch and, you know, create microtrauma to it. And so the bands are very accommodating. Again, it's a muscle stretching a muscle, so they respond the same. And so it's not like stretching with a towel. It's not like stretching with a rigid strap. I think, and again, this is personal experience. I was one tight camper at age 32, 33. And I think I've got relatively good flexibility, especially through my hips now, that I never had before. And so I think there's a component to be said there. But I will preface it. Four things that cause inflexibility: neurotension signs, myofascial tightness, core trunk stabilization and structural tightness. Structural tightness, neurotension issues, bands will handle great. Okay, myofascially, those are going to have to be handled with foam rolls or some type of myofascial release approach. And then stability problems, you don't want those people stretching in a band because the band is going to loosen them up, create more instability, and therefore now they're going to have more problems. So those people are the people that respond great to dynamic stretching like lunge reaches and all the dynamic movement patterns that are always talked about out there. So identify what the flexibility problem is and then determine which tool. And again, neurotension and structural tightness, they do great with bands. Myofascial does okay, but you're going to need to use foam rolls. And stability problems, I would suggest doing the assisted lunge program, which is also part of the flexibility DVD. We talk about how to use the bands to train and stretch out inflexibility problems as a result of stability, not as a result of immobility.
Well, Dave, that's really, I mean, that could be a topic all in itself, I know.
Yeah.
Then we're wrapping it up here. So my last question is going to be, if someone wanted to, you know, that's just, I never heard someone talk about it in that manner. If someone wanted to get an idea of what part of the spectrum they're at, are there easy tests that someone can do on their own to see which aspect they benefit most from?
So is there an easy test to figure out which flexibility?
Yeah, whether you're having, whether it's a neuromuscular issue, a stability issue, or...
Yeah, I think there is. I think, number one, I would get a hold of foam roll instructions and go through a foam roll training session or just go through some foam roll training. If you have a lot of discomfort with foam roll training, there's a good chance you got a lot of myofascial tightness. I would foam roll for 2 or 3 weeks to get rid of that discomfort first before I would then go ahead and bring in the bands as a stretching implement. And from a neurotension standpoint, go ahead and start stretching with the bands, but as you're doing a stretch that you feel should be the hamstring that should be tightening or feeling the stretch, and you start feeling tension in your low back or tension down into your ankle or calf, you've got neurotension deficits because the stretch is not indicative of where you would anticipate it to be. Structural tightness, you'll just simply get the stretch right in the area. It's very predictable. If you stretch your calf, you feel it in your calf. If you stretch your hamstring, you feel it in your hamstring. And then the last one, the stability problems. The best way I can describe a stability problem is I never stretch kids now earlier than probably a sophomore in high school. And the reason being is kids are very high-strung, their nervous system is very hypersensitive, and they essentially have a lot of neurotension tightness, but they also have a lot of stability problems. They don't respond well to band stretching. And so the best way I guess I can describe stability problems is this. If after a couple weeks you've been stretching with the bands and you feel you've been doing a good job and following the guidelines we lay out and you're not getting any response at all, I mean, in fact, you're tighter every time you come in, I would firmly look at, are you a stability problem? And the way you can identify that is, hey, can you do simple lunges? Do you have a good stability plank? Do you have a history of low back pain? You know, do you have a history of chronic tight hamstrings that have never freed up and loosened up? Those are all indications that, you know what, you probably could very well have a stability problem. I would attack that with dynamic movement and doing those types of things first.
Well, David, it's been absolutely awesome. I've really enjoyed this, and I know people are going to really just dig into this because it's been a hot topic, especially as of late. So I wanted to just sort of end it, let you talk about, you know, where can people find more about your programs, the DVDs, e-books, you know, where do you recommend people to start and so forth?
Well, I think the best place to start is just go to my website, resistancebandtraining.com. It's all one word, just www.resistancebandtraining.com. I would start there. And there's three sections on there, one for trainers, one for coaches, and one for fitness enthusiasts. And so that can kind of point you in a direction. That site has video on it. It has articles on it. I'll be posting 5 more articles probably within the next week on it. So I'm really trying to get as much information onto that site as I possibly can. So that's the first place to start. I think the second place to start is jump on my newsletter. I mean, you receive my newsletter, and I'm getting better at giving people what they're looking for. I'm by no means an expert by any means, but I think I'm starting to get a feel for what people are looking for, and I'm trying to put more video clips on there and things of this nature so they can really see that what I'm doing is what I'm doing, you know. And so I think that's a second place to go. I think the next place is I've got a contact question. If you have some questions, especially if you're listening just later on the tape and you come up with some questions, go to Resistance Band Training, go to the question section, and shoot me out a question, and I'll try to get back to you with as quick of an answer as possible. I usually can get back to people within 24 hours. If you want to order bands, hey, that's great too. All the bands are available on Resistance Band Training. Just go to the shopping cart. There's discount packages, and I will suggest this. If you're going to purchase bands, purchase a pair. And the reason being is you triple your options for training by getting two bands versus one. The other thing is, if you have to train in environments where potentially whatever you're going to attach the band onto could tether the band or damage the band, just spend the extra $12 and pick up a band utility strap, and now you can hook it onto absolutely anything you want because the band actually hooks onto the strap, not the structure you're attaching onto. So that's products. That's as far as the best resource to learn how to use bands, probably the best strengthening resource is the Unleashed DVD. That takes you through 10 setups and takes you through beginning to more advanced training. If you're looking from a speed standpoint, you want to learn how to use the bands for speed. Obviously, accelerating to the ball is a little bit dated, but it's still a great video and shows you tons of ways to use bands for speed training. And then obviously the flexibility ability video I just came out with this year, Total Flexibility with Bands, that's on there. And that takes you step by step through how we use the bands to stretch out the lumbopelvic hip region, really focusing mostly on the hip because the hip is what shuts down first. We need to get that going. So that should give them a good start. And again, it's resistancebandtraining.com. And I hope you guys check it out and let me know what you think.
I appreciate it, Dave. And just to reiterate some of that, Dave's definitely got the best material and the most extensive material on band training. So I highly recommend it. Very well-founded, both practically and scientifically. It also has great physical products. You know, his bands are awesome. And you know, I can't emphasize how important, you know, getting those $12, what were they, the utility straps?
Yep.
I mean, because, you know, we use them at, you know, playgrounds. We use them in our gyms. And you do end up hooking them on a lot of things that can wear out your bands a lot faster. It's well worth the investment. It's very reasonably priced to keep the longevity of those bands. So definitely, if you're going to pick up the bands, I'd highly recommend them as well. So, Dave, I'd like to thank you again. It's been awesome. And I'd like to tell everyone, want everyone to go to resistancebandtraining.com. And you know, next time we'll have another guest, but I'd like to thank Dave again. And, Dave, do you have any last words you'd like to leave us with?
You know, just I hope people will give bands a great try because I firmly believe they're the missing link between taking us from weight room strength into more real life or real world strength, and that is the stuff we use on the field and every day. So I hope they'll give them a chance so they you know, bridge that gap a little bit because I think they'll have some great success with it.
All right, this is Josh Hankin from Sandbag Fitness Systems, and thank you to Dave Schmitz from ResistanceBandTraining.com. Thanks again, Dave.
You're welcome.